Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Hello, good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company again on the Irish programme live on ERA. Coming up in the next hour, I have another one of those jam-packed programmes and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to try and squeeze in, and let's keep the fingers crossed and hope for the best on that, all right? It was St. Patrick's Day yesterday. There was plenty happening over the weekend and indeed probably for a few days before that as well in many places. So I'll try to bring you a little sample of what I gathered myself over the weekend here in Spain at some of the St. Patrick's Day events. George Lee will be talking to me about some of the stories that made headlines back home in Ireland over the last 7 days, Irish stories particularly. Peter O'Dwyer has had a very busy week because he's been keeping an eye on what's been happening with Brexit. A lot has been happening, as you know. We'll get the latest Irish reaction from Peter, who is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland. Patricia Traynor is back with us again this week, and she's got a lovely anecdote about the Battle of Kinsale, about Hugh O'Neill and Hugh O'Donnell, King Philip of Spain, and how he became King of Ireland and what happened after that and the Spanish Armada. And it's a lovely story and she'll be telling us that very shortly. We're going to be looking at some famous Irish birthdays coming up this week. Some of the people still with us, some not, but we'll mark the birthdays nonetheless. I'm going to try and see if I can give you a little heads up on some of the events that happened on this week in history that were connected to Ireland. And we'll throw some music in there as well, which will more than likely be connected with whatever else we're doing on the programme. We'll try and squeeze as much of that in as we can. As always, if you'd like to contact the programme at any time, you can contact me at ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. Let's have a look at those famous birthdays, as we always do at the start of the programme. Today being the 18th of March, Alex Hurricane Higgins, that wonderful snooker player who unfortunately is no longer with us. He was born in Belfast on this day, 1949. And Pat Edry, the wonderful jockey, was born in Dublin in 1952. So we say happy 67th birthday to Pat Edry. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 19th of March, Caroline Corr from the wonderfully talented Corr family, born in Dundalk in 1973. Tomorrow, she celebrates her 46th birthday. And Dermot Crowley, the actor, born in Cork in 1947, will have 72 candles on the cake. Wednesday, the 20th of March, Amy Huberman is an actor, and she was born in Dublin 40 years ago, 1979. Terence McSweeney, former Lord Mayor of Cork, he was a volunteer in the War of Independence. He was a playwright. He died on hunger strike while in custody in Brixton. He was born in Cork on the 20th of March, 1879. Michael O'Leary, businessman, Ryanair owner, born in Mullingar, 1961 on the 20th of March. And in 1927, do you remember the lion that used to roar at the start of the MGM films? Yeah, well, his name was Carbra, C-A-I-R-B-R-E, and he was born in Dublin Zoo in 1927. I didn't know that, but there you go. There is one other birthday that I have to mention, being the 20th of March, and I have three children, two sons and a daughter. And my daughter celebrates her birthday on the 20th. She is 20 this year. So, Alana, a very happy birthday to you. On Thursday, the 21st of March, Rachel Allen, celebrity chef, was born in Dublin in 1972. She's 47 years old this week. And Oscar Traynor, former Fianna Fáil politician, cabinet minister, and was particularly renowned for his time as Minister for Defence. Well, he was born on the 21st of March, 1886. Friday is the 22nd. And Peter Lorre, the golfer, was born in Dublin 45 years ago. Peter Clossy, the wonderful rugby player, born in Limerick in 1966. Happy 53rd birthday to the Claw. Saturday the 23rd, Joseph Locke. He was born Joseph McLaughlin, actually, in Derry. He was born in 1917. And finally, next Sunday, the 24th of March, Sharon Corr, another Corr sister, was born in Dundalk in 1970. She's going to be 49 next Sunday. And Donica O'Callaghan, wonderful rugby player from Cork, was born 40 years ago in 1979. We've had two mentions of the Corr family, so we have to take a track from the Corrs to get us underway musically on the programme. So we'll dedicate it especially to Caroline Corr, 46, tomorrow, and Sharon, who is 49, next Sunday.
Everyone's changing, I stay the same. I'll give it back. Winter is coming and I need to stay warm.
Wonderful music from the chorus from Dundalk, and we say happy birthday again to Caroline, 46, tomorrow, and her sister Sharon, who is 49, next Sunday, the 24th of March. Let's do a very quick break.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney, in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney, in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Now, you might think that during that little break, Ger's voice, something strange happened to it. Well, the fact is that with the weekend that was in it, I wasn't 100% sure that I could manage to get a fresh programme together. And I said, right, we might put a best of together just in case something goes wrong. And so the first part that you've just heard there, the last 8 minutes or so, was pre-recorded last week. But we're back live again, and I have two things to tell you. Firstly, you can hear the state of the voice, and one or two other bits in the programme between now and the end were recorded earlier in the week as well. And the second thing to tell you is that Peter O'Dwyer has just been in touch with me to say that he is unable to join us this evening because he has actually been sent away on an assignment. As you know, Peter is the business reporter, senior business reporter with the Times Ireland, and that obviously takes precedent. So no Peter O'Dwyer today. But this is where I was going to be talking to Peter. And because we're unable to do that, I'm going to put something in here that was recorded over the weekend in Torremolinos. And it's something that I was going to use in the next week or so, but I'm going to use it today. You will, in the past, have heard Ben Sweeney's name being mentioned on Live on Era. Ben is my son. He currently works as a producer, radio producer, with Tip FM back in Ireland, but was in Torremolinos to MC the festivities. And he got chatting to Tony Bell. Tony set up the Irish Association of Spain back in the 1970s. And it was nice to be able to get a chance for him to talk to Tony about the organisation and about the St. Patrick's weekend as well. And so we're going to hear what Ben had to say to Tony. Now, Tony, in this interview, is also joined by his wife on occasion, Teresa, who would have a certain amount of knowledge about what was happening as well. So Ben started talking to Tony by saying to him that it was a jolly good day and a jolly good weekend in Torremolinos for the St. Patrick's celebrations.
It was lovely day. We really enjoyed it. And everybody, the good thing is seeing everybody having fun and dancing.
And all of those people having fun and dancing, they're here because of the work you did in 1991 when you set up the association. Tell me about setting up that group.
Well, when I came to Spain in 1988, as I said, there's different associations from different countries, and we weren't represented. So it was obvious that someone had to do it. So I picked up the gauntlet and decided to form an Irish association. Then I announced a big meeting, and a big inaugural meeting at a hotel. A load of people showed up, and then we took a committee out of that. And then from then onwards, it's history. We know what we did.
And was there a big Irish population over here at the time?
You know, the estimates were big, but I'm no good at figures, and Terry would know more on that. Ask him about that. But we had a big Irish, but we covered all of Spain. Now, we set up a little presence in Madrid, etc., Barcelona, and so that we'd be in contact, like a link line. And we even had a commission in Gibraltar as well. We set some good days in Gibraltar as well. It was a link line. We didn't go to Portugal.
Someone mentioned that on one of the radio programs, 120 Irish people living in Spain.
And you couldn't say that because, you know, there's people here that in those days who wouldn't declare that they were here from Ireland. We weren't interested in that business. That was for other people. We were specifically, it started because people had hit problems, you know. Some business went down, husband and wife split, you know, and people got sick, people were destitute. We had a welfare group which would go visiting people all over the place, calling a woman from Dublin, woman in Arroyo, and we used to call her, like a couple of days, she was an alcoholic. sent a young back to more recently we sent a young lad, he was sleeping rough, back to Derry. But we picked up English people as well. We wasn't for Irish people, but we picked up anybody else, we'd help them out. We're a pretty good committee, we're very proud of that fact. And then of course the obvious thing was to have a St. Patrick's Day event and a parade, which turned out to be the best event in the Costa del Sol. Yeah. It obviously stands out.
And as you see here today, it's not just the Irish. The Spanish are here, the Welsh are here, the English are here, there's Americans, Canadians.
Sorry, I interrupted you. They all love the Irish culture. And it's infectious. And I still love it. I'm 77, still mad about it. And wherever I go in the world, I look for an Irish bar and a bit of Irish music.
Now, you love Ireland, but why Spain?
I don't know if it's a strange one, because when we were in the UK for a while as well, and when our kids got small, we came on holidays here, and then we fell in love with it. There's a similarity in the culture, their attitude to life, their easygoing attitude. One time a Spaniard said to me, said to an Irishman that, Evans mañana. I heard that saying, mañana, Evans mañana. And he said to the Irish lad, he says, well, you've got similar culture in Ireland, haven't you, Evan Mañana? And the Irishman said to him, we wouldn't have been that urgent.
So I suppose the lack of urgency was there when you arrived in 1988.
Yeah.
How long was it before you said, right, we need to get this going?
Well, it's from the very first day.
1991.
You got the figures off to Terry today. Yeah, from the first day we were moving. We were moving to picking up... get in, and then people would tell us, they heard, we'll get to speak to the Irish Association about that. We had President Dictor around, of course. Ben Grohl had the president, and Lesapone had the president, Marby had one, and they said Gibraltar and places like that, and Nerka.
Do you ever think about the amount of people you must have helped, thousands I'm sure down through the years, that have had great comfort knowing that there is an association there when they go to Spain?
It makes me feel good inside to know that we have, and I can see some of the faces now, to see the success we had. We had some failures, but we had the majority of them were successful.
What's the highlight?
I said it's very difficult to pinpoint that. I just can't put a fair figure on it. It's supposed to be continue with the Irish culture and showing the good of Irish people in a foreign country, and how people warm to you and see what we are capable of when our back's against the wall, because we are one hell of a race of people, you know.
Were you always the type of fella that would take charge of everything when you go over? Look, I'll set this up.
Yes, definitely. Always take charge.
I was asking that question to come to you. I was hoping to come to you after his answer.
But I was hesitating on that because I couldn't answer that question, but I tend to be at the lead of a few things, all right, in my lifetime, yeah.
So you moved over together. When he said, look, I'm going to set up the Irish Association of Spain, did you go, ah, Tony?
No. He came up by himself, and I said, home. My children were still at school.
She was in a shifts course.
I was in a career, and I'd come back and forth this summer. He'd come over to do something in Spain because he liked the sunshine. But
and how long was it before you came out?
Oh, we come out every 3 or 4 times a year, but
I didn't. When you passed your chef course, she wanted to be a chef, so she went for a course, and that was it.
So it would have been 1993, 1994.
So the association was running at that stage. When he told you, over a letter or a phone or whatever, I'm going to set up the association, what did you think?
Oh, for Christ's sake. I've got 5 kids. Why are you doing
that? No, I never dwelled on that. I mean, we set it up, put it out there, advertised. I used to run a column every week in the store in English. Wrote in about it and keep everybody in touch. And I just took things as they come in. Maybe to get a phone call or something. And we used to meet up once a week, incidentally, as well. And then maybe have a session, you know, music session as well, and a chat.
Keep the thread alive. I suppose the last question to ask would be the future of the association, just going as it is, or have you ambitions or places you'd like to see it go?
Well, it's up to Terry where he takes it now. There's young blood there, including yourself. So I wish you all the best of luck, and I say great signs, you know, and so hopefully you will take it to... It's limitless, isn't it, where you can go to, you know. But keep a good, strong link with the Irish people, and bring all the Irish tourist border on board. We've had the Irish ambassador from Madrid been down a couple of times with us. Just make sure that you keep an eye on... Actually, not so much nowadays because of so much technology and how the contact and the social... What's it called? Social media. In the early days, we didn't have that, you know. But still, there still will be people who need. More recently, there was a woman who lost everything and lost everything. It was flooded. So Terry picked her up. There'll always be something that you have to keep your eye, just ear to the ground, and I keep observing to see what anybody in trouble, you know. And then the St. Patrick's Day celebration, that's the easy part.
Yeah. Well, I suppose on behalf of the thousands of people down through the years, including that woman and everybody else who's been helped down through the 26 or 7 years, thank you very much for setting up the association and your help. And
best of luck in the future.
That's Brian Kennedy and a great song. It's called Let's Stay Together, a song that you would have heard many people down through the years singing. And I thought it was appropriate to play that song after that lovely interview with Ben Sweeney and Tony Bell and Tony's wife, Teresa, in there as well on occasion. Right, earlier in the week, I put together, in case I couldn't do it today live, the events that were happening across the world on this particular week. Nothing happening today, the 18th of March, of much consequence. On Tuesday, tomorrow, the 19th of March, 1988, two British soldiers who drove into a Republican area of Belfast during a funeral procession were seized and killed. 1998, the country's beef industry took a further blow following strong indications from the Department of Agriculture that County Clare was to be included in the beef export ban to Russia. In 2001, Mary Robinson, the former President of Ireland, then UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, announced that she was stepping down from her post, saying that she thought that she could do more outside the restraints of the UN system. Wednesday is the 20th of March, and on that day in 1964, Brendan Behan, writer and poet, died at 41 in the Meath Hospital in Dublin from complications caused by diabetes and alcohol. 1971, Brian Faulkner succeeded James Chichester Clarke as Prime Minister of Northern Ireland. And in 1993, on that day, two bombs exploded in Warrington in Cheshire in England. A three-year-old boy was killed and more than 50 people injured. Another child died of his injuries later. The IRA admitted responsibility. On Thursday, it's the 24th of March, 1970, on that day, a grand old day for Ireland, because Dana, Rosemary Brown, won the Eurovision Song Contest for Ireland with the song All Kinds of Everything, our first time to win it. And in 1998, on that day, Sonia O'Sullivan won a gold medal in the World Cross Country Championships. Friday is the 22nd of March, and in 1983, Belfast-born and Dublin-educated Chaim Herzog was elected President of Israel. In the year 2000, over 2,000 student nurses walked out of hospital wards and lecture halls in a protest over tuition fees. 2001, the government declares a national emergency in a bid to contain the country's first foot and mouth outbreak in 60 years. And in 2002, at the four courts, the conviction of Paul Ward for the murder of journalist Veronica Guerin was quashed. That caused quite a sensation at the time. Saturday is the 23rd of March, and in 1847, Choctaw Indians collected money to donate to starving Irish hunger victims during the famine. 1951, on this date, Shannon Airport is the base, or was the base, for a rescue operation after a US aircraft crashed into the sea. Some wreckage was found 450 miles off the west coast, but all 53 people on board were lost. In 1976, the EEC, as it was called then, rejected the Irish government's application for a derogation from its directive for equal pay to men and women. Sunday is the 24th of March, and in 1909, the death in Dublin of John Millington Synge was announced. Plays of Irish peasant life, on which his fame rests, were written in the last 6 years of his life. 1968, on that day, an Aer Lingus plane, the St. Phelim, crashed into the sea near Tusker Rock in County Wexford with the loss of all 61 passengers and crew. 1972, Stormont Parliament and government were suspended and direct rule from London was introduced. William Whitelaw became Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. And finally, on the 24th of March in 2010, President Mary McAleese paid tribute to fallen Irish at Gallipoli while on a state trip to Turkey. And there we go. Some of the stories that made headlines across the world relating to Ireland on this week.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Well, The Voice has the effects of shouting over music on Saturday and Sunday on the Costa del Sol, as you can hear, but many thousands of people helped us all to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And I was in Benalmádena on Sunday and met some lovely people. Let's hear from them.
I'm from Scunthorpe.
Are you just visiting Spain or do you live here?
No, just visiting.
And St. Patrick's Day, have you got Irish connections?
No, not really, no. They say when I was in Scotland that with my name, it is Irish.
What is your name?
Blades. Like razor blade. That's as much as I know.
And you're enjoying the festivities?
Oh, yeah. Every year, yeah, yeah.
And where would you normally celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Here.
Oh, really? You come back and forth?
Yeah. We come regular, but my wife's mum and dad, They lived here for 20 years. Yeah.
Do you want to wish all your friends a happy St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah. Everybody who I know and who knows me, I wish them all a happy St. Patrick's Day. Thank you.
From Cork. No, we're here for a family holiday for the week.
And when did you come in?
We came last Tuesday to Thursday.
Right. And did you come specifically for St. Patrick's weekend?
Yeah, we were both off work, so we said we'd come away and do something different. First time away, St. Patrick's weekend, so something totally different.
You have a little one there on the pram. What age is she?
He's 14 months. So he was too young last year, so it's too wet and too cold at home, so we said we'd come away and something totally different.
And what would you normally do on St. Patrick's Day in Ireland?
Before we had him, we'd probably be in the pub. Or else we'd be at work. But since we had him last year, we couldn't do anything because it's so bad, the weather. So just say we get away this year and do something different.
I'm from Lebanon, but I live here in Spain since 96.
And do you know what St. Patrick's Day is all about?
I know it's a day of the Irish. They celebrate it, and also it's a religious day, but it's more well known as for the Irish Guinness and, you know.
And you're here with your family today. You're going to stay for a few hours?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Have you got family in Ireland or do you know anybody in Ireland?
I have some friends, yes. Yeah.
Whereabouts?
Some of them in Dublin, but some of them, they are in Australia and in England. So, but they're Irish, actually, yes.
I found a lady from Newfoundland in Canada, and there's a great connection between Ireland and Newfoundland, isn't there?
There sure is. The part of Newfoundland that I've lived in for many years is on the southern shore of Newfoundland, what's called the Irish Loop. And my husband and I had a tourism business there for many, many years.
Okay.
And we had lots of people come from Ireland to Newfoundland. And actually, there's exchange groups between Newfoundland and Ireland. And lots of great music. Missing home today because there'll be tons of great Paddy's Day celebrations. But this is our fourth winter in Benalmádena. So there's a lot to love about Benalmádena. Yeah. The weather, the people, and Paddy's Day celebrations. We're having a great time.
You're almost Irish then, are you?
We are almost Irish.
My name is Cathy. I'm from Burnley, Lancashire. I used to live here for 15 years, and I've been back to England 5 years, and I've come to visit my parents.
St. Patrick's Day, is it a big day of celebration for you?
It's fantastic to all congregate together, the English, the Irish, the Welsh, the Scottish, the Spanish, all to come together as one family. It's an absolutely lovely day out. Young, old, children, everybody.
And you know many Irish people?
Yes, I know a lot of Irish people.
I'm from Kent.
There's more English people here, I think, than there are Irish people. Do you reckon?
I think there's more Irish.
Are you one of us?
No, I'm English, all right.
My next door neighbour comes from Limerick.
Oh, sure, there you go.
That's where I got the shirt.
And tell me...
present.
Really?
Ron O'Driscoll, number 30.
And do you celebrate St. Patrick's Day every year?
We come up here every year, yeah.
And the last 2 years, you've had rain. You've had bad weather
right.
The last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, we brought the sunshine today.
Oh, yeah. I see you covered it.
We covered it just in case. It was a lovely talking to you and happy St. Patrick's Day.
And to you, thank you. Claire.
And Claire, where are you from?
I'm from Cork.
And are you living in Cork or just visiting?
No, I live here in Tormelinas.
And how long have you been here?
We're on our sixth year now.
And loving it?
Absolutely, yes. Loving the weather especially.
And isn't it lovely to have a St. Patrick's Day with no rain?
Well, I suppose to wet the shamrock, we really don't mind a drop once it doesn't last all day.
There's another way of wetting the shamrock.
Well, I'm sure we're quite capable of managing that one too.
What used you do when you were back home in Ireland? How did you celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Similar to this now, very similar, and back to really wet the shamrock in the evening.
Indeed. Claire, lovely talking to you. You've got fabulous shamrock tights on you.
Thank you very much.
Aberdeen, Scotland.
Know your name?
Oh, Paul.
Are you living in Scotland or Spain?
Live in Scotland.
And how long are you in Spain for?
2 days.
Now, the Irish and the Scots, we're kind of all the one really, aren't we?
Yes, definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Have you been to Ireland?
Yes, Dublin on a few occasions.
Yeah. And you like it?
Yeah, brilliant.
I'm Michelle.
And where are you from, Michelle?
I'm from Scotland.
As well?
Scotland as well.
And have you any Irish relations at all?
I have. My granddad Paddy was Irish, so I'm half Irish. My last name, before I was married, was McCabe, so I count myself as half Irish.
Oh yeah, but you're a Celt anyway, so it is fine.
That's fine.
And would you always celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Not always, no. But we've got these, all our friends got together and they've been doing it for so many years. So we were invited and I think it's something that's on our bucket list for every year now. It's a good day.
I'm from Warrington in England.
And you always celebrate St. Patrick's weekend?
Yes, we do. We were looking for friends. And one of them was Patrick, his birthday yesterday. And our other friends, their wedding anniversary today. And they're from Ireland.
You know why their wedding anniversary is today, don't you?
I think it's because it's St. Patrick's Day.
Because in old days, in Ireland, you couldn't get married during Lent. The only day you could get married was St. Patrick's Day.
I don't know. I'll ask him when I see him.
A man who's dressed up in his Irish kilt. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
And where are you from?
I'm from England.
And why did you dress up the way you're dressed up today now?
Because we got married on St. Patrick's Day, and it's our 12th wedding anniversary today. And we celebrate like this every year.
Well, congratulations. And is the kilt just a kilt, or is there a family tartan?
My mum. My mum that's no longer with us.
And she was Irish, was she?
She was, yes.
From where?
Well, she was from Antrim. Well, I was born in Belfast, but okay. Yes. Right. She was an Antrim girl.
Well, she's obviously looking down at us today because she sent the good weather.
She is. She sure is.
And this is the lovely wife who is celebrating her 12th wedding anniversary. Is he looking after you?
He certainly is, yes. He always does.
What's the best thing about being married to this man for the last 12 years?
Everything.
Oh, that's sweet. Listen, thanks for talking to me and happy St. Patrick's Day and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. On occasion on the programme, we call upon Patricia Traynor. Patricia is originally from Belfast and she spent many years lecturing at the Malaga University. And she joins us on occasion to tell us little stories and little anecdotes. And she's got a lovely anecdote today about the Battle of Kinsale, Hugh O'Neill, Hugh O'Donnell, the King of Spain, who became the King of Ireland for a while and then went back. Look, let's just go to Patricia. She'll tell you all about it herself.
Today we're going to talk about a very famous battle, the Battle of Kinsale. Now, this was at the time when there were princes in Ireland rather than one king. There was a Prince of Donegal called Hugh O'Donnell. There was a Prince of Ulster called Hugh O'Neill. And they decided that they were going to ask Philip II of Spain for help to defeat the English. And the Hugh O'Donnell went to see Philip of Spain and he agreed to send a fleet. The problem is they didn't have telephones, they didn't have internet, they didn't have any way of sending messages. And what happened when the fleet arrived? They arrived right down in the south of Ireland near Kinsale, and Hugh O'Donnell and Hugh O'Neill were right up in the north of Ireland. And of course, they couldn't get a plane or a train down. They had to walk the whole way down through Ireland. And as a result, even though the Spanish had now surrounded Kinsale, the English had surrounded the Spanish, and then the Irish came down eventually and surrounded the English. So you had three layers of people and nobody could really move. The Spanish were getting a bit worried because they had been there the longest and they realised that something had to be done. And so they sent a message to the Irish to say, we're going to attack a certain time on a certain day. However, that message was intercepted by the English, who then attacked beforehand. The result was that the whole thing was a fiasco. The Spanish returned to Spain. Many of the Irish were killed and it was unsuccessful. The fact is, what people don't realise, this Philip II of Spain, how many people know that he actually at one time was the King of Ireland? Now, I thought that was amazing. In fact, he was King of Ireland from 1554 to 1558. Why? Because he married Mary, the daughter of Henry VIII, Mary Tudor that was. And when she became Queen of England, she was Queen of England and Ireland. And so she wanted her husband to have exactly the same title as herself. So he became King of England and Ireland. But he also signed an agreement that that would only be as long as she was by his side. Unfortunately, Mary died only 4 years later. She and Philip had got married in Winchester Cathedral only 2 days after they had met one another. So it wasn't exactly what you would call a long courtship. And the marriage only lasted for 4 years, and Philip then went back to Spain. But what is interesting, he went back in 1558. And if you know a little bit of your history, 1558 88, he sent the Spanish Armada, again, this time, to attack the English. And unfortunately, that was not very successful either because, really, of the weather. Many of those ships were washed up on the west coast of Ireland, and some can even be seen in museums in Northern Ireland as well as the west of Ireland. But another thing which is very interesting about Hugh O'Donnell, after that defeat at Kinsale, he decided to go back again to Philip and ask again for some help. However, he himself was poisoned by someone whom he thought he could trust, and he died and is buried now up in the north of Spain. And poor Hugh O'Neill waiting for him to come back. Well, he never came back. Now, the interesting thing about Hugh O'Donnell is that the clan O'Donnell passes on the prince or the head of the clan to the most recent O'Donnell. And it's interesting because the head of the O'Donnell clan is now by someone who lives in Spain, who's called Hugo O'Donnell, and he is also the Duque de Estrada. He's also a very famous historian in Spain, and he is the official head of the O'Donnell clan. And they had a big celebration here in Spain, inviting over many of the O'Donnells from all over the world, from Ireland, from England, from America, from Canada, celebrating the O'Donnells. So another link between Spain and Ireland.
A lovely story. That is Patricia Traynor. She'll be back with us again. Let's take a very quick break right now. Come back to me just after that. I have already spoken to George Lee. We did this on Friday evening. We had a very quick chat about some of the events that were happening in the past week in Ireland.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Here's a chance to take a look at some of the Irish stories that Irish people were talking about in the past week or thereabouts. George Lee joins me again, the two G's, having an old chat about the news. George, good to have you on St. Patrick's weekend.
All right,
Jorge. So you get a bit of Spanish and a bit of Irish in there. I know that a lot of politicians come in for criticism for heading off around the world and people see it as junkets. But you know something? Our politicians, they get access to governments, world leaders, some of the best markets, decision makers. It's something that other nations don't get when they celebrate their Nations Day, isn't it?
Yes, and I suppose this probably goes to the Irish diaspora, Ger, right across the world, and the amount of connectivity and how Irish people are seen. And, you know, we spoke previously, I know, about the greening of the buildings, which is another thing. And I see our politicians have gone far and wide. We do get unprecedented access, and it's the one time of the year when we can really, really ram the message home that Ireland is a good place to live and work.
And as you say, heading across to our near neighbours, because last week we spoke about the difficulties in relations between the two countries at the minute, generally brought about by the whole Brexit story. But on Thursday morning, the long-awaited news broke that one former British soldier was to be charged with the murder of a civilian and the attempted murder of others on Bloody Sunday in Derry back in January of 1972.
Yes, and I suppose that was really one of the iconic moments of Irish history, and we will all remember the picture of then Father Edward Daly, afterwards Bishop Edward Daly, and he waving the white handkerchief coming across. And really, 1972 was the bloodiest year, if I'm not incorrect, in the whole of the Troubles. And it really was something, I suppose, that was a seminal moment. But 14 people were killed when members of the Parachute Regiment opened fire on the Civil Rights March. Northern Ireland's Public Prosecution Service considered whether there was sufficient evidence to bring charges against 18 former soldiers, one of whom has since died. I think, if I'm reading it correctly, they said that while there was an acceptance and an apology issued indeed by the British government a number of years ago, that was based on a lower level of evidence than there would be to bring criminal charges. And I think with the passage of time and with obviously the death of people in between times, I think that was where the problem rested for the Crown Prosecution Service. There was never going to be an easy or a nice answer to this particular one. But you would hope that in some ways that people could now begin to find closure, that awful word closure, that people could begin to move on in their own lives. And you just wonder, will this be enough, I suppose, for the victims and their families?
Now, sometimes people have in their head an idea that houses that were built
during the Celtic Tiger, the boom times back in the early 2000s, may be of substandard quality because they were literally just thrown up in various places, wherever there was an oil field, and they got planning permission. But I see that there have been further calls for a full risk assessment of properties built or extended during the Celtic Tiger period due to fire safety concerns. What's this all about?
Well, the Irish Times reported during the week that one of the largest property management companies in the country, Keenan Property Management, I said that significant fire safety issues have been discovered in almost all, which is a chilling phrase, of the 60 apartment developments that it manages. For a sector organiser, whose name is Brendan O'Brien, said that this was a stark but unfortunately not unexpected finding. The more you look back on it, we went crazy in those years. When you think of the amount of our economy that was built on the building sector, when you think of the prices that were being charged, and then you think of the economists that came out, no more than my own namesake, to be fair, who came out at that time and really called it and said there is going to be no soft landing there. Another economist came out and said, oh, there will be a soft landing. And, this will be all good for our economy. A lot of people have got hurt in a lot of ways, and this is just another one of those ways that people have got hurt in all of this building boom.
Just to refer to Brendan O'Brien, who was the SIP2 sector organiser, he was quoted on that particular one because it was SIP2 members of the Dublin Fire Brigade did some reviews of apartment blocks that were built between 2000 and 2014, and that's why Brendan O'Brien was quoted there. But a lot of this is coming out of the Grenfell disaster in London as well, isn't it?
It is, and look, as anybody that has ever been involved in building or building management or facilities management, as I am to a little extent myself, the one thing that you cannot mess about with and that your fire safety and your fire alarm systems and all of that. And that seems to be where this is.
Now, speaking of safety concerns, the grounding of Boeing 737 MAX 8 series aircraft across the world has been a talking point this week. And I suppose it's worth pointing out that it has come about because of the Ethiopian Airlines crash, which was the second high-profile crash of a Boeing 737 MAX 8. And indeed, Michael Ryan from Lahinch in County Clare lost his life in the Ethiopian Airlines crash this week.
Again, I was watching the TV coverage of this during the week. Of course, there's so many layers on this story, I suppose. The human one really is the one that got to me the most. His mother appeared on TV the other night, and a more dignified and wonderful woman you couldn't expect to see, a good West Clare woman. But she spoke about lovingly about her son and how he had given his life, so that other people would have a better life. He worked for the UN World Food Programme. You do also need to look at the whole Boeing 737 MAX 8, and the British Civil Aviation Authority were amongst the first to ban these aircraft overflying or entering their airspace. And the Irish Aviation Authority followed suit very quickly. It was probably because of that that the Boeing themselves have grounded the fleet in an effort to try to find out what's going on. The other Irish aspect on this story, of course, is that Michael O'Leary in Ryanair has, I think, somewhere around the mid-30s of these aircraft ordered for delivery in May. And I'm sure that they're looking on with an awful lot of interest as to where this story will go, because I would imagine that they're probably retiring some of their fleet on the back of bringing in those new aircraft. So the knock-on effects could be absolutely massive.
We shall have to wait and see how the story develops. Now, Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue in the news as well last week, as he is on a regular basis. But, you know, the country seems to have an opinion, or a lot of people in the country have an opinion, that the government ministers and departments are there to look after them and to look after the citizens of the country. And when you see a story like this, it reassures you that actually it's about big business, and it's about making sure that the people who bring big business into the country are looked after, because Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue held a meeting with KBC, the bank, to reassure the bank of the government support in the wake of the controversy surrounding the forced eviction of a Roscommon family in December. And I know that there are a number of angles on this particular story, but still nonetheless interesting that he would reassure the bank.
I'm not sure about the use of words. You know, sometimes things can get lost in reporting somewhere along the line. And I'd hate to think that he was calling in KBC just to reassure them of that. And I'd be surprised, to be fair, I would be surprised if that was the full context of the conversation that happened. But we're just taking this report at face value. You know, you say that the government are there to protect the people of the country. I suppose we need to look at it and say that the government are there to protect the statutes of the country. And if the statutes aren't right, well, then we need to rewrite statutes, and that's in no way defending any of the events that have happened. This is an area that I have a particular interest in myself. I, at one point, had an involvement with the Money Advice and Budgeting Service in Ireland, and I would have seen firsthand the fallout of an awful lot of these repossessions. I can look at it from certainly from the human perspective as well. But he called in the bank, and it was to reassure KBC about the support for the bank in the light of the recent difficulties. The documents went on to note, however, that KBC was an important challenger bank with an Irish market share of around 8% and more than 1,000 employees here. And I suppose there is a balance to be struck here. And KBC, I know, have been seen as being one of the more aggressive banks in terms of the repossessions in the country. But I really think that we need to find a way in this country that allows us to deal with these legacy debt problems that people have without having to resort to tossing them out of their house or going along the emotive line. I mean, the term eviction in Ireland is a very emotive term, and it's probably far more emotive in Ireland than it is in an awful lot of other countries in the world. So we just need to be very, very careful.
Indeed we do, and just to point out that it was the journal.ie that accessed the reports through a Freedom of Information Act, and the report came from an internal Department of Finance document, and that's where that particular story came from. Now, I know we spoke about the dangers of gambling a couple of weeks ago, but Cheltenham, sure, it is no more than you'd see in the Galway races. Cheltenham brings something special to the horse racing world, and it's something that people who ordinarily wouldn't get involved, putting a few bob here and putting a few bob there. But I was listening to a report on, I think it was RTE during the week, and they were talking to people, and they take holidays from work, and they meet up with their friends, and they go, they even hire buses and go on excursions to different parts of the country just to watch the racing. They save money in a shoebox on a weekly basis for 50 weeks of the year so that they'll have plenty of money to lose, and it's kind of one of those things, and it's like their holiday. Cheltenham is just something special, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a madness. I mean, I wouldn't know a thoroughbred horse from Delaney's donkey, to be perfectly honest. So you're probably the wrong. I'm probably the wrong man to be talking about horse racing. But yeah, look, it is. Cheltenham is special. It has grown, I would say, in the last 20 or 25 years. Yeah. And I think it has become a very Irish festival in Britain. Yes, I heard that report as well. And to be honest, I was a little bit shocked. Some guy was on there and he said they save 100 quid a week in his body, and they blow 5,200 euros on Cheltenham. And I think he had done it in the first 2 days this year. He takes a couple of days off work, goes to the pub and drinks until Vintas too, and watches Cheltenham. It's not me, but look, the world is made up of an awful lot of different types of people, I suppose, thank God. And
absolutely, different strokes for different folks. And finally, George, one of the highlights of the year in Ireland for entertainment and for people who like to go to live events is Electric Picnic, and this year's event is sold out, but during the week the lineup was announced to great celebration.
People of our vintage, Ger, which will be somewhere, you know, 80 and down.
Thanks very much.
I'm amazed at the number of my friends that I hear say every year, I'm after the picnic. And you kind of wonder, you're missing out on something. But I was never a great one for camping out in wet fields. But look, some people enjoy that. But yes, the lineup: Florence and the Machine, The Strokes, The 75s, Billie Eilish, Christine and the Queens, Dermot Kennedy, Jarvis Cocker, and James Blake, and with more acts to be expected to be added to the lineup in coming months. Now, even that, Ger, to be fair, if I am to be 100% honest,
go on.
Recognize about four of them, to be honest.
I know, but you know who's headlining it is Hozier.
Absolutely. Hozier is headlining it, of course. Yeah. And what's lovely about it is it's generally the last hurrah for parents before the kids go back to school. It happens between August 30th and September 1st this year. So I think just to clock up a little bit more on the visa card before you buy those school books.
That's
you know?
It. If you can remember Oxygen, it used to be for the younger people. And when my lads turned 15, they were asking, can we go to Oxygen and that kind of crack. It doesn't happen anymore as far as I know. That'll tell you how far out of the loop I am now. But Electric Picnic, I've often heard being described as Oxygen for old people.
It is a wonderful festival. It's very well run as well. It's the other thing. Hail glorious St. Patrick.
Oh, we had that last week, but thanks very much. And we'll chat to you next week about whatever happens during the week. Look forward to that, all right?
And you too, Ger.
And that is my lot for this particular week on Live On Air at the Irish Programme. I hope you have enjoyed the programme as much as I have enjoyed putting it together. And in fact, there was a lot of fun and a lot of anxious moments in putting this week's programme together. Back with you again on the radio next Monday. Hopefully the voice will be a little bit better than it is right now. Looking forward to your company then. Thank you, as always, to everybody who took part in the programme today. Thank you very much to Patricia Traynor. Thank you to Ben Sweeney for his input with Tony Bell. Thanks to George Lee. Thanks as well to our Irish-Spanish cultural correspondent and consultant on the programme, Jose Antonio Sierra, for his constant work and support on Live On Air as well. Thank you, most importantly, for listening. And I look forward to your company. Don't forget, if you'd like to get in touch with the programme at any stage, you can email ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. Look after yourselves and each other until we meet again. From me, Ger Sweeney, until then. Bye-bye now.
Ger Sweeney presents Live On Air in association with emeraldconnection.net.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.